Hey, Marvel Maniacs, welcome to another exciting episode of Guardians of the MCU. This is episode number 48, and we are recording this on Monday, May 20th, 2019. And we have an interesting evening. We have two brand new co-hosts on with me tonight who are guesting because John is ill and Liz is doing something else. I have no excuse for Liz. She's just away doing something else, probably Disney related, because it's Liz. We know how she rolls. So we have one voice, which if you are a random chatter listener, you are probably familiar with, and another voice that you're familiar with, but he's been on this show before. I'm going to start with the one that you have heard more recently on the show. That's Jay. How are you tonight, Jay?
Good, Tim. Thanks for having me back.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on short notice.
Oh, absolutely.
It was a thanks to both of you for coming on short notice because I knew yesterday that John wasn't going to make it, and then this morning that Liz wasn't going to make it. And I had a couple of folks who wanted to come on the show who said, hey, you know, let us know when you need another host. And I messaged them, and I waited, and I waited, and it was a little while. And, they never got back to me. So I kind of scrambled a bit. Yeah. So the other one is, again, a voice you've not yet heard on this show, but you have heard elsewhere on the Ram Chatter Network, and that is Eric. Good evening, Eric.
Hey, how's it going? You know, I would have been on the show previously, but you asked me to fill in for someone. I guess John was ill and again or something. And do people still use that? Isn't that kind of 80s?
Illin?
Or you said ill.
Wrong, ill.
Oh.
Like sick. Like he has bronchitis or something.
Yeah. Okay, so you asked me to come on before, and I said, you know, I can't because it's such late notice. So today I get a text from you about, 30 minutes ago now?
No, Jay's was about 30 minutes ago. Yours was way sooner, but you were sleeping.
Yes. Well, the first thing I do when I wake up while I'm still laying in bed is I check my texts from Tim.
So, doesn't everybody?
But I'm here and I'm happy to be here finally.
Very good. Well, we're glad to have you. And this is fun. I mean, we love having folks on who have some really great depth of knowledge in things related to the MCU, as well as into Marvel Comics, which both of you guys have a lot of depth of. So that always makes it a good time.
Yeah. We're deep into something.
Yeah. Yeah. Hip deep, neck deep.
Yeah.
Maybe even over our heads at times.
Hey, is this the episode where I get to complain for an hour about Captain Marvel? And
no, it is not.
What a bad movie it was.
Nope. Dang. We can set up a recording for you to do later for that, which I can just probably
nobody
delete.
Would listen to it. It's fine. We'll just keep going.
It's the bonus content.
Before we get started, a handful of our usual announcements here. Certainly find all of our shows over at randomchatter.com. We appreciate you leaving us reviews wherever it is that you find your podcasts and spreading the word, telling your friends, family members, coworkers, even complete and total strangers about us. We definitely appreciate contributions to the network. You can do so by going over to randomchatter.com/Patreon. where you can provide monetary donations on a monthly basis, the lowest being $1 a month, and that gets you full access to our Discord community. But we also have a public access to our Discord community for free. That is to our public lobby and our show channels. But that $1 a month gets you access to a lot more, like dozens of other channels. We have spoiler channels in there and all sorts of discussions about different things. There might even be a channel in there dedicated just to Jay Shepard and talking about him.
You're just trying to get my dollar, aren't you?
And of course, levels up from there, you get access to bonus content and other things that we record, and even a special show called Behind the Curtain, which Eric, Lou, and I put together on usually a couple times a month. We also have Random Chatter merchandise now available from TeePublic. Head over to randomchatter.com/community and click on the store link there, and that'll bring you right over to our creator page for TeePublic. You can get t-shirts, hoodies, mugs, all sorts of things. Jay, there's none of that kinky stuff that you're into, but you never know. Never know what you might find.
Well, why are you spreading lies?
No, we checked. It's not there, Jay. It's not available.
And Eric reminded me of a new show that we have. Eric, you want to take a moment to talk about that?
Yes. This week, hopefully, we are going to be launching our newest show on the Random Chatter Podcast Network. It's going to be called Trailer Breakdown. And each week, Lou, Tim, and I are going to be breaking down the latest trailers to be released and talk about basically whether or not the trailer does a good job of selling the movie, or in some cases, even perhaps a TV show. And we're going to probably try to do, two trailers, I think, an episode. We're going to take something that's a little bit more mainstream and break it apart, and then we're going to take something that maybe is kind of flown under the radar, something that you might not be aware of, but hopefully will be a good pick that you might want to check out. So I am currently waiting on one last piece of the graphics from Lou. Once I get that, we'll have the show logo, and then we will be up and running. So I'm expecting to launch probably late this week.
Well, that's so nice. Eric is expecting.
I'm expecting. Yes, I'm going to give birth to yet another show. It's going to be very painful, very messy.
Well, that's making new shows. That's what that's about. So,
yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, that's right. See, when a mommy show and a daddy show love each other very much. Yeah.
All right. And before we jump into our news, this is probably the last time that we're going to give this potential spoiler warning because we, you know, do end up wandering into discussion here and there that may very likely include things about Endgame. We're a few weeks into the Endgame release, so really hoping that you've seen it. If you haven't, just, you know, you got to be careful out there. That's all. That's all.
Wow. I guess the people who are waiting for the DVD are screwed, huh?
Yes. Pretty much.
Wow, Tim, you're rough.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you know, we're harsh over here. We're harsh.
Hardball here. Okay.
So speaking of Endgame, we do have a bit of a box office update for Endgame. As of just a few hours ago, Endgame has passed Avatar in the all-time domestic box office.
Woohoo!
Which is big news. That puts it second behind Star Wars The Force Awakens, which it is not at all likely to catch. It's got like another $160 million to catch Endgame, or to catch The Force Awakens. I just don't think that's going to happen.
But that's just that's domestic, you said, right?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so it's still domestic. Behind Avatar globally.
Yes, yep, yeah. So it is still behind Avatar globally, which Avatar holds the first place in the global box office, and that's still going to take a little while. The box office take for Endgame seemed to slow down quite a bit, which I don't take that as a bad sign. I think it's just kind of normalizing. I mean, the first weekend was so huge and record breaking. Obviously, that's got to tame down. So, it's been dropping about 50% or so each week,
which
isn't completely abnormal. Yeah, exactly.
But I think what's going to happen is where most movies drop out of the box office entirely, this one's going to linger a lot longer than most.
Yes.
The question is going to be for how long. And like you said, that $160 million or so, that's going to be really hard to maybe pull that off. It brought in a little under $30 million this past weekend.
Yeah.
In its fourth week. So I don't think it's going to pass TFA domestically. Now, what do the global numbers look like? How far behind Avatar is it? Do you know?
Off the top of my head, I don't remember.
Yeah, they're saying with the slowdown, it doesn't look like it can pass, but I don't remember what the numbers were. But
oh, that's a shame. You know. I would love to see something beat Avatar out. Avatar was so overrated. It was a good movie, but it was technologically advanced, and I mean, it was a gimmick movie. It was fun. I liked it, but the fact that it's going to sit at the top just because of that, not because it was a good movie, is frustrating.
Well, I'm always a fan of the adjusted box office anyway, because, you know, ticket prices go up every year.
Right.
So, I mean, it's no wonder that, Avatar is so much higher, you know, for selling a lot of tickets, but it's never going to beat Gone with the Wind. I mean, that's the thing. True. No one's I mean, maybe at some point, but I don't know that anyone can sell as many tickets as Gone with the Wind. And I think you should be looking at adjusted. No, I understand why people look at it this way, because it's fun. But
yeah,
I'm all about the adjusted.
Okay. Well, hey, if it knocks Avatar out of the top spot, then I'm okay with it.
Yeah.
And that's a good point, Jay. I mean, there's a lot of different ways that we can look at this. I mean, you're looking at raw numbers, or you're looking at adjusted for inflation numbers. You're looking at there's a lot of different permutations.
Just South Dakota, you know, I mean,
right? Just South Dakota. Absolutely.
I would be kind of interested to know how that fares. I guess we could see.
I'm sure we could find that statistic somewhere. I'm sure maybe someone on Twitter or Discord or something will throw us the South Dakota only number. That would be very interesting. And don't be sneaking any Canadians into that number.
No.
Nope.
Don't do it. Don't do it. Even though North Dakota is more prone to that, but still, South Dakota, there might be some. You never know. Yeah, so, you know, it is looking less and less likely, but you never know. I mean, they may have another big marketing push. Certainly expecting, since there will be an overlap in Endgame being in the box office when Spider-Man Far From Home comes out. In these overlaps, we've seen kind of a bit of a bounce of the older movie selling some more tickets in here. We saw it with Black Panther when Infinity War came out, and we saw it with Captain Marvel when Endgame came out. So I think just because of another resurgence in interest and people saying, hey, let's go spend half a day watching a Marvel movie. so that could happen.
Yeah.
And Endgame has been certified fresh officially over at the fine folks of Rotten Tomatoes. It is sitting at 94% right now.
Wow.
And one of the highest rated Marvel movies in all of Rotten Tomatoes. So glad to see it. Black Widow. You guys excited about the Black Widow movie?
I'm looking forward to it. I think it should be interesting.
I don't think I've been less excited about a Marvel movie ever.
Wow.
As far as an MCU movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's rough, Eric.
Even with Ant-Man?
I loved Ant-Man.
Ugh.
I loved it. Can we talk Ant-Man for a while?
No.
Since we've got you here on the show, I know you're not here too often, but ladies and gentlemen, this is why Tim will not let me be on GMCU.
Since you've got me on the show, I've got you on the show.
Now, see if you had you, me, and Ant-Man.
It was only 12 minutes, Tim. That was pretty good.
Yeah.
Lost complete
before
control.
Ant-Man got mentioned.
Yeah. So, Black Widow, I'm okay with the character, but I never cared that much about the character in the comic books. In the films, I liked her in the earlier movies where she was more relevant. But basically she's a spy ninja sort of character, and that's great when you're dealing with Iron Man 2 or Captain America Winter Soldier or something like that. When you start dealing with being out in space and cosmic heroes and finger snapping and things
that's
like
tough.
That, what is she gonna do, throw a stick at him? Like, it just, there's not much there for her to do. And as far as any sort of tactics or strategy or something like that, they kind of touched on that a little bit finally in Endgame, but in one short scene, like, she's just been so wasted, in my opinion.
I don't disagree with you. I think it is definitely difficult to find a role for the more human or mortal characters.
Yeah, Hawkeye's in the same boat.
Yeah, when you're dealing with such powerful characters and entities. But early on, she definitely did very well. And, you know, you mentioned Winter Soldier. And quite honestly, I think Winter Soldier was just as much her movie as it was Captain America's or Bucky's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Bucky's not a great character either, so I'd be okay with that. But I think I would be more interested in seeing Black Widow as a television series where she's going off on missions, and they kind of focus more on the spy nature of it and her infiltrating organizations or whatever. Like, that to me is interesting, and I'm sure the movie is going to be something similar to that. But I really think they should have, plus with what happened in Endgame, I truly feel like they should have swapped the Captain Marvel and Black Widow movies around. Had Black Widow have the Black Widow movie released before Endgame, and then have Captain Marvel released later on.
Yeah, I could see that, and I understand why they would have done it the way they did. You know, but building up a little more momentum for Black Widow prior to Endgame might have been good. It kind of depends on, you know, what subgenre they're gonna go for here. I mean, I'm assuming it's going to be, you know, a spy thriller. You know, it's going to be like a John Wick kind of movie where she just has to go out and, you know, just kill a bunch of people, or
kill hundreds of people in 90 minutes.
Yeah.
One big long action scene with a brief pause in the middle.
But, you know, I'm a really big fan of S.H.I.E.L.D., and maybe they can have her, you know, have integrate some stuff with S.H.I.E.L.D. back into the films. And stuff like that. I'd really like to see that. So,
yeah, it's interesting to see what the possibility is. Of course, after seeing her demise in Endgame, basically then everyone assumed, okay, so they're just going to have to do an origin story, because there's not really a Black Widow story to do moving forward. Interestingly enough, I guess at a Comic-Con in Italy, Sebastian Stan, who plays Bucky, the Winter Soldier, let it slip that the Black Widow movie is apparently taking place after Civil War.
Good. We don't need an origin story. I mean, it's... Let's just hit the ground running with... What's that?
Yeah, I was going to say Age of Ultron, I mean, sort of dealt with that origin. As much as you need, really. I mean, if you want to go whole hog, you can go watch Red Sparrow.
Well, yeah.
Which is not Black Widow, but it's Red Sparrow.
Different color, different. Well, not a different bird, but unless there's a widow bird, I don't know.
Different animal.
Yeah.
We don't need an origin story. We need a compelling story about something she's doing. We know there's not much more to know about the character that matters.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and if it takes place at that point too, you know, you've got Captain America breaking, you know, his team out of the raft at the end of Civil War. Mm-hmm. And we know that who is it? Sam and Natasha and Steve all kind of go on the lam.
Yep.
And, you know, end up in Wakanda, you know, working in Wakanda. So does that mean that there are, you know, the possibilities for these other cameos, or, you know, it'll be her movie but have these other larger characters in it and a smaller role? So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they do if this is in fact true, because there's a lot of things that they could do with whatever time period of whatever is going on after Civil War. Tying this in, there's also another rumor that they are doing some location scouting in and around Budapest, which is fantastic because, you know, we've had a couple of mentions in MCU movies and discussions between Black Widow and Hawkeye about something that occurred in Budapest in their past together. And so I would love to see...
You and I are remembering that conversation very differently, Tim.
Yes, exactly. So I would love to see some kind of a flashback with the two of them to tell that story. Interestingly enough, Liz and John are very much against it for some reason. They kind of want to leave it as a mystery. Just, you know, one of those references that are made that we don't get a fill in on, which, you know, I can understand that. But still, I mean, they've brought it up enough that I just think it would be something very cool to show us.
Yeah.
And you know, that kind of goes with what you were saying, Jay, with who else are they going to include in this movie? I mean, this has to be her movie. I really don't want to see a lot of other major characters in this movie, but I think some kind of a flashback with her and Hawkeye would be fantastic, because they really are.
That'd be great.
Those two came up. I don't want to see the origin story, but there is this point in time where the two of them got together for a period of time and did things. And it was probably maybe somewhere around like her defection. But, you know, I mean, there's a lot of unknown there. And without going back and referencing comic book lore for her. So I don't know.
Well, I think it's important to have characters be able to play off of one another. It's really difficult to make a solo movie. And oh, I've got an alarm going off, probably saying, hey, it's time to wake up. Okay, sorry about that. Tim can cut it in post. It's all good. It's important to have the ability for characters to play off of one another. And if they bring back Hawkeye, they don't have to introduce a different character for her to play off of. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of exposition through dialogue. You get more character development. You get more invested in the characters if you can see them interacting with other people. That's what we do as humans. We're social characters, and our motivations often have to do with the people around us. And if you introduce Hawkeye, you've got another character that we already care about. And Hawkeye is a good character when he's relevant, and he's relevant in the same type of situations and scenarios that Black Widow is relevant in. Yeah. So I think Hawkeye's a perfect fit for this movie.
And I would say, though, I had not heard the scouting in Budapest, but I will tell you that if the film was to take place in Budapest, they probably would not be shooting in Budapest. I would guess they would go film in Prague or something like that, which would stand in for that. But nevertheless, I'm sure that's just a rumor at this point, because I've also heard rumors that it's already shooting in England, which I can't, again, confirm, because no one's talking about it. We won't know until probably Comic-Con, right. And he'll say, oh, yeah, this is in the can. It'll be out in, you know, March. So,
yeah, and we have already heard kind of those same rumors that they are filming already. And we have heard about locations such as Prague and Berlin being looked at. So, you know, again, if they're going to do like some flashbacks to like Cold War period, you know, there's still a lot of, you know, old Eastern European architecture that they can film around with those areas, which is fantastic for flashbacks. So, you know, we'll see.
We'll see what comes. And actually, it looks like May 1st of 2020 would be the first available date, if that's what's shooting now, which it appears to be, because the next date would be November. So unless something is filming now, there's no way they're going to make a May next year date. So Black Widow is pretty much locked in for that date.
Yeah, I agree.
I don't know if this has been covered on Guardians of the MCU yet or not, but have you guys discussed the fan theory about them bringing Black Widow back after Endgame?
We haven't discussed it. I mean, yeah, there's been a lot out there of maybe she's in the Soul Stone. And
well, the premise I've said, the only one that's made me say, well, okay, maybe, I guess, is that to get the Soul Stone, you have to sacrifice a soul.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Captain America goes returning all of the stones. So if you give the Soul Stone back, does that mean that you get the soul returned to you?
The directors or the writers in one of their talks surrounding the press for this film basically said no deposit when you return the Soul Stone.
Good. Good. So, okay. So we can lay that to rest right.
Yeah,
right
I'm
there.
Pretty sure that's how that's going to be. Though I would love to see a Marvel one-shot of Captain America having to go back to Vormir and meet the Red Skull and have to return the Soul Stone. And
yeah, it's like, what the hell?
What happened? Boy, you look better.
Yeah, I would love to see that. I think it'd be fun to watch him return all of the Soul Stones. We assume he gives Mjolnir back to Thor when he goes back. How does he get the ether back into Jane?
He uses the thing and puts it back in her
plunger?
Butt.
The plunger thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Uh-huh. The one that Rocket, like, how did Rocket get it out? I mean, what is this rabbit doing, you know, poking me?
Yeah, here? That was a scene they shouldn't have cut.
Excuse me, Jane, you remember 2 minutes ago there was a raccoon here who stuck you with this thing and you were feeling better? Hey, I'm going to stab you again. You're going to feel like crap. Just saying. You guys ready to talk about kind of a wacky rumor?
Sure.
Because this one's really interesting. I just came across this one today. And I'm calling this one real wacky because I've not seen this cited by any other sources. And I'm getting this from boundingintocomics.com, which I don't think I've ever referenced for anything ever in my entire life. No, and I'm not throwing shade at them. I'm just saying I haven't heard of them. And, you know, usually we like to kind of get a lot of our news from like Variety and Entertainment Weekly and that kind of stuff.
The second line of their story says the rumor comes from 4chan. So really... This is a 4chan rumor.
What better source can you ask for?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
There have been lots of true things that have come through 4chan, as long as you can sift through all of the noise.
Yeah. The sun will rise tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
That's my prediction. All right. So this rumor is that Keanu Reeves has been cast as the main villain for the Eternals. Thoughts?
Whoa.
You know, of all the casting news recently, no, or not news, but rumors, we've got Robert Pattinson from Twilight as Batman. We've got John Krasinski as Reed Richards.
Hey, I like that
which
one.
I didn't until I saw some of the Photoshop mock-ups. I'm like,
it's amazing.
Plus, I've never
it's
liked
uncanny
Reed Richards.
Uncanny looking at the new Fantastic Four comic and like, they
oh, it is.
It
it's almost
exactly
like they
like
wrote
him.
That in. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, looking at the Keanu Reeves. See, I don't know this character they're talking about. I could see Keanu Reeves showing up to do kind of like a cameo villain, like a just a one shot. He's in the movie and he's done. But I don't know anything about the villain.
Yeah, I'm not completely familiar with this one either, though. I mean, I've read The Eternals, but I mean, he's The Eternals is kind of forgettable. Not that it's not one of Kirby's Jack Kirby's best works. But then you know. Stranger things have happened in the MCU. Like I still kind of can't get over the fact that Sylvester Stallone is a member of the original Guardians of the Galaxy. So, you know, and when they said that Chris Pratt was going to be taken over, you know, as Star-Lord, I'm like, you know, the fat guy from Parks and Rec. So
yeah,
there are, I'm 50-50 on, you know, casting rumors that turn out to be true that surprise me by how good they are, and casting rumors that turn out to be true where I go, oh my God, this is like the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
So I thought, I mean, like, I think Keanu's a good star. I mean, you know, obviously a lot of people kind of link him to Bill and Ted and stuff. I was watching Bogus Journey again last night because I'm getting hyped for the third movie whenever that comes out. But, you know, the John Wick films are doing really good. He's amazing in the action in that.
John Wick 4, by the way, has been announced.
Oh, did it get announced? Okay.
Yeah.
I heard that there was a potential for that.
2021.
I thought he was okay in Constantine, but I was not a follower of the normal... you know, I had not been reading Constantine at that time, so it was just a character to me, and I thought it worked. I understand it's not, you know, the character that was, you know, Alan Moore had created and that was in the comics at the time and all that.
As and a movie, it was good, though. I enjoyed it.
Yeah,
it
okay. I thought it was better than average. Okay, it was better than Catwoman when it comes down to it.
Watching paint dry is better than Catwoman.
But, you know, and I like what Matt Ryan's doing on Legends of Tomorrow and what he did on the Constantine show on NBC and stuff like that. So could Keanu do this? Sure. Is there any truth to the rumor? I don't think so, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, there's the question of, is it true? And there's the question of, would it be good if it's true? If it's true, Again, I've not even read the Eternals comic book. I've gotten glimpses of them through some Guardians of the Galaxy comics and probably some Silver Surfer books at some point. So I don't know the villain, but casting Keanu Reeves as an MCU villain, I'm on board with. I think that would probably work out just fine. I'm skeptical about whether this is true, though. So I agree with Jay.
Yeah, I'm real skeptical, too, considering, again, that we've only gotten this from one source. And I in a moment, Jay, I kind of want to just tap in your knowledge a little bit here on the Eternals, because it's not something that, aside from like some, you know, a little bit of Wikipedia research, we've looked into here, and I probably need to go to like Comixology and find like a trade of the Eternals or something, and just to kind of get into some of the characters. But I mean,
I think the original series is like 13 issues. I mean, it's nothing.
Yeah.
Really.
Okay.
I mean, and it came out that, when? Like back in the 70s or something?
Yeah, it was.
70s, yeah.
So Kirby left Marvel, went to DC, created the New Gods, and did all of that stuff with Mr. Miracle, and then left. And I'm going to say 76 or so, he came back to Marvel, wrote Captain America, created the Eternals, Devil Dinosaur. I think he also did some 2001 Space Odyssey comics that were like after the movie. And they were really influenced. The Eternals is really influenced by like Chariots of the Gods.
The first 10 pages of those comics are just blank.
Don't get me started on 2001.
So
don't.
I brought up 2001. I brought up Ant-Man. All right. I'm doing good. So
trolled like crazy this episode.
So because but, the
so who are the Eternals, or what, I guess, are the Eternals for people who don't know?
Yeah, they're gods in essence, inspired by the whole Chariots of the Gods movement in the 70s and people, you know, thinking that ancient astronauts visited the planet to seed us, you know, seed life here and create humans and stuff. So they're the Eternals, who are like the good guys. They're also very much like the Inhumans, except that they are more space bound rather than earth bound. And there are, I believe, the Deviants are the kind of like the Morlocks that the Eternals use to build stuff. Maybe that's the Inhumans, though. I get them all kind of wrapped up.
Didn't the Eternals create the Inhumans, though? Am I getting that wrong?
The Inhumans were around in the comics before the Eternals, but retroactively, though, I think they may have done the experiments on them. Now, of course, in the MCU, it's all based on like Kree biology and stuff like that,
right,
which the Eternals were experimenting on all sorts of beings and stuff like that. So, and there are really only like two main Eternals that have kind of continued. I believe they've both been in the Avengers at some point, Icarus and Circe. And Icarus is a big buff blonde dude, and Circe is a raven-haired beauty that looks a little bit like Angelina Jolie. So that leads us to the other rumors that Angelina Jolie has been cast in that role. So,
yeah. Yeah. So we have Angelina Jolie, who we're pretty sure has been cast, along with Kumail Nanjiani. There's a lot of rumors floating around with this. I mean, Millie Bobby Brown is a possible rumor with this. They're also talking about some potential connections back to Asgard with this and some other things, which I actually would appreciate, because it would connect it to what we know in the current MCU. So I like, that would be good if they had like, hey, here's a not necessarily an origin story, but like a flashback, spend 15-20 minutes showing us a story where they interacted back in Asgard, and then, you know, and then bring us forward, just to kind of help ground things with a known character. That tends to help instead of just a cold start.
Yeah, they're really old, obviously, hence the term Eternals. So, I mean, talk I've heard is that, you know, the film would be set in the distant past, you know, as sort of an origin story for them. But what makes that relevant to phase four of the MCU?
Right.
That's the whole crux of this. What is phase four going to be about? We thought we knew that Spider-Man Far From Home was the first movie in that, but now Marvel's come out and said that it's actually the last film in phase three. So,
right.
Oh, okay. That's official.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And based on the other rumored films from phase four, I do not know what any of these might potentially have in common as, you know, like connective tissue, tell a story. So,
I mean, looking at the different possibilities, none of them really seem to fit with the slate of movies that we're getting.
No, I mean, we've got a lot of sequels to movies that we've already gotten. So things like
Black Panther, Doctor Strange.
Doctor Strange, Guardians 3.
Yeah.
But then we also have Shang-Chi.
Yeah, Master of Kung Fu.
I know nothing about this character. I've never heard of this character until they announced it.
Yeah, Shang-Chi is you know, Grasshopper. I mean, that's basically
very Kung Fu. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He was.
Yeah, I kind of got like an Iron Fist sort of vibe.
It's Iron Fist, but without the kind of that white savior element to it. I mean, he's a Asian character.
Right.
Yeah. Well, I know. People are kind of upset about it from the way that it was filmed and stuff. But
yeah.
I mean, it's faithful to the origin of the character and stuff. And so they had these two Kung Fu characters, a white guy that trained to become a Kung Fu master, Iron Fist. And then there was this Asian guy and he became the master of Kung Fu. And, you know, again, created in the 70s, Kung Fu and martial arts was huge here in America. I mean,
yeah.
You couldn't like throw somebody over your shoulder without hitting a dojo, but hey,
nice.
Seriously,
nice job.
Come for the host, stay for the jokes. Yeah.
My concern with this goes back to the same argument about Black Widow and Hawkeye, and they've kind of raised the stakes so high now, and we're going back to Black Panther with the super high tech stuff, like the future tech. Mm-hmm. We're going with Doctor Strange, which gets into different realms and such. We're going with Guardians of the Galaxy, which is in outer space. And then we're going to some guy who's studied really hard and has a black belt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. One thing I'm really concerned with is that this next story arc, I guess, which, you know, since, I mean, we're finishing up the third phase right now of the MCU, which was the Infinity Gauntlet arc. So, you know, whatever this next arc is, I'm just wondering if it's going to resonate as well as the first one did, because they really are. It's so hard to see where the connective tissue is amongst these right now. And of course, once we get into it, we're going to say, oh yeah, duh. That's where it was. But right now, looking forward, it's really tough to see.
And there's still two other films. So they've given us 2, 4, 6. They've given us 8 dates that they know Marvel movies are going to come out. Disney has, just like they've set up the Star Wars and the Avatar dates and all that kind of stuff. So there's still 2 other slots that are unfilled after Black Widow, Eternal, Shang-Chi, Doctor Strange, Black Panther, and Guardians 3. So, I think
there's another Spider-Man movie that's in the contract.
No, based on my understanding, this was the last Spider-Man film that Marvel would be helping with. He had 5 appearances, so that would have been Civil War, the 2 Avengers films, and 2 solo films.
Gotcha. Okay.
So, but you know, I mean, that could be rewritten, but supposedly it's after Far From Home, it's kind of up to Sony to do whatever with Spider-Man, and they could probably renegotiate and have something like with the Hulk, where they can't make a Hulk movie, but the Hulk can show up in anything as long as he's not billed in the title, which I believe is along the lines of the deal they have with Universal for that.
Which is just such a weird agreement.
And, you know, when they were going through Chapter 11 in the 90s, they were basically, I mean, they sold off their top properties because to Toy Biz. You know, I mean, seriously, there were some horrible, horrible business mistakes that were made in the 90s. And the fact that we're still here talking about Marvel and they're relevant in this fashion is completely amazing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how they've survived.
It truly is. And the agreement with Universal is funny just because Universal doesn't have to do anything and they just get checks.
Yes.
You know, I mean, it's they do literally nothing. Like Sony is like doing things. Universal just like they get a check in the mail once a month. It's like, hey, thanks for playing.
They're like, hey, you can we can make our own movie about our character and maybe it'll be good. Maybe it'll be bad. May or may not be successful. Or you guys can keep doing it for us and have debates about whether it's going to knock Avatar out of first place of all time. Yeah. Just send us the checks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm guessing they're pretty comfortable with that.
So, of course, everything that we have going on now in the MCU is orchestrated by the grand poobah of all things MCU, and that's Kevin Feige. And we have kind of a somewhat regularly recurring segment here, which is Kevin Feige Says, because the guy likes to do interviews, which I think is fantastic. He never really says a whole heck of a lot in these interviews. He doesn't give us a lot of information, but he likes to give interviews, and he usually does give a few little gems in here. So last week he did a Reddit AMA, and comicbook.com, among many other sources, captured some of these things. And there's a handful of pretty good tidbits, or at least interesting things that I found from this AMA. First of all, he said that the Mandarin, the real Mandarin, not the fake BS Mandarin that we got in Iron Man 3.
Oh, not Trevor Slattery, eh?
But the real Mandarin and the Ten Rings is likely to reappear somewhere in the future of the MCU, which is interesting. The Ten Rings has had a heck of a presence in the MCU. Aside from Iron Man 3, where they were much more upfront because of the Mandarin, the Ten Rings had some very subtle appearances and presence. But of course, the Mandarin is primarily, at least in the comics, a nemesis of Iron Man. So it's going to be really interesting to see what kind of place they have for the Mandarin in this when we don't have an Iron Man anymore.
Well, Shang-Chi would fit in a with a Mandarin, you know, in some sort of Asian themed storyline that they might have coming up. So there's potential there.
That's a good idea. I hadn't thought of that. I like that. Also, he said that Smart Hulk, which is kind of the name that he's given to the merger of Bruce Banner and Hulk that we see in Endgame. Smart Hulk was powerful enough and actually had the foresight enough that when he snapped the gauntlet to have everyone return from Thanos' snap, he put them back into places of safety. Because when you think about it, there were people who disappeared when they were like on airplanes. Well, those airplanes are no longer in that exact spot anymore. They might have crashed if the pilots were snapped away, or at least they landed and, you know, they're off doing something else.
Well, so, and it's 5 years later too. So,
and it's 5 years later. Yeah. So Smart Hulk had some thought into this and actually like deposited these people very safely, like in a nice cushion of foam away from any like sharp objects, things like that. So that was very nice of him. Thoughtful.
Yeah.
Well, he did stay in a Holiday Inn Express last night.
Aha. That helps. That helps. So he mentioned that go ahead, Eric.
Oh, I was just going to say, the whole Smart Hulk thing, I'm just really glad that they did that in Endgame. For me, that was always my Hulk anyway. I grew up with the Peter David run back in the early 90s, where...
Well, pretty much all the 90s, I think, but...
Well, yeah. Yeah, I mean, Bruce Banner and the Hulk had always been combined. I mean, it was different from the movies because in the movies, he's got this kind of a Zen attitude, whereas in the comic books, he was kind of a dick.
Yeah.
But
my whole take on it, I was fine with it, but it was such a kind of a sticking point of Infinity War that Banner was unable to bring Hulk back, and then all of a sudden in game, boom, there they are. I wanted more of an explanation other than, hey, you know what? I really just kind of meditated on it, and me and Hulk are now the same person.
I would have wanted more of an explanation, but then the more I think about it, like, what are they going to do? We're going to get 20 minutes worth of scenes of him focusing really hard or doing experiments. Like, okay, so he figured it out.
You're right. In a cinema environment, it's very different. Like, in a novel?
It's Budapest.
Yeah.
We don't need to see it.
Yeah. In a novel, they could have done it fantastically. But yeah, on screen, that's very difficult to do.
Yeah, there were other things to do.
True. Let's see. The MCU, Feige said, is generally planned out about 5 years at any point. And they typically have a general plan of, you know, major story beats that extend much further than that. So, just kind of brings about this, really what we've always thought and what's been very evident now from these first three phases that, yeah, there is a big plan. We're not flying by the seat of our pants. There's a lot of orchestration that goes on here. Despite the fact that there are multiple writing teams working at any point in time, you have different directors handling different movies who are handling different characters, sometimes even overlapping characters. And we know that, like, James Gunn, even if he wasn't a director of a film with the Guardians in it, he was still kind of an advisor.
Mm-hmm.
And I think listed with maybe a producer credit or something. But and in some cases, actually wrote the dialogue for the Guardians because he knows how to write Guardians dialogue.
I mean, anyone who thinks they are actually flying by the seat of their pants is really not paying attention. I mean, that's just to make one movie that doesn't have any connections to anything is quite a feat. I mean, I know, you know, dozens of movies get released, you know, every month. And mm-hmm. so, you know, a lot of the movie watching public doesn't even think about it, you know, in terms of the business and the function and how this stuff happens. But as you said, to navigate all of these moving parts and have one person, pretty much. I mean, there's a core group of people that work at Marvel Studios that are responsible for this, but to have them kind of oversee and direct and, you know, project manage mm-hmm. all of these storylines is puts most of us to shame, even on our normal jobs where we only have like one or two things to do at a time, you know?
Yeah, well, and if you think about your normal job, how often do you have, I know some people do all the time, but a lot of us don't have one single project that is the singular focus they have that's running sometimes 2 or 3 years long.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
If you think
it's hard
that,
to sustain something.
3 years. Yeah.
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 I mean, I've got projects that go 6 to 8 months and those are tough, you know,
right,
just to keep everyone's focus on that while they're also, of course, being asked to, you know, work on other stuff. So
sure. Yeah, sure. And it's an interesting juxtaposition to, for those of you who are Star Wars fans, you might be familiar with the story group, that Lucasfilm has. And the concept that as it's been explained to us for the story group is that they're really much more passive. Whereas what's going on here in Marvel is very forward-leaning, and they are, you know, certainly they don't seem to be meddling. I mean, from all the writers and directors we've heard from, they're not really being told what to do. They're like, hey, here's your character that you can play with. We might want you to hit these one or two story beats somewhere in your movie, but beyond that, have at it. Have fun. Enjoy it. But there's still some direct involvement, whereas the Lucasfilm story group is kind of there as a resource and maybe like a
it's like a helpline.
Yeah, a helpline, right. Quasi stamp of approval, like at the very end kind of thing. But yeah, but
I think
they're not as forward leaning.
So there's definitely some misconceptions about the Lucasfilm story group. They are, as you described, Tim, but I also think that there are some misconceptions. And I'd be curious as to Jay's impression on this as well. I think there's more oversight going on with Lucasfilm than people give them credit for as far as what the overall plan is and what the overall plan has been. I know that Rian Johnson has said, oh, well, they didn't force me to do anything in particular with episode 8. And people have kind of taken that and run with it, saying, oh, it's just chaos and people are just doing whatever they want when they come onto these films. Even if it's not the story group itself that is directing what's going on with the overall story arc, I think someone is, whether it be Kathleen or Abrams or whomever. But yeah, this the purpose of the story group is more also to monitor things like the comics and the novels and the video games. And they really are, like you said, Tim, more of a helpline for, yes, that fits with continuity, and no, this does not fit with continuity, but maybe if you took it and put this kind of spin on it instead, then it would fit, and it would work well with everything else. It's a different sort of a resource. But that's not to say that there isn't a group of people, or maybe even just one or two people at Lucasfilm who are kind of guiding the direction of things.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Jay, you're really plugged into kind of Lucasfilm and the business of Star Wars. What's your impression on that?
I think that's what you said is pretty correct. I mean, because the story group is there to make sure there's the continuity between the various mediums, books, comics, you know, artwork, whatever it is they need to have happen. Whereas it's not Leland Chee and Pablo Hidalgo and anyone else in the story group that are coming up with the ideas that are going to make it into the film. That would be the producers, right? You know, purview, and whether that's Kathleen, like you said, or JJ, or the director, or their group of unsung writers and stuff that are doing other things behind the scenes. So yeah. I think that's pretty close.
Cool.
Do you have any speculation on, I know Tim's probably talked about this a few times, but I haven't really gotten to on Jay. I imagine you haven't either. Any speculation on what sort of, you know, if we look at phase 1, 2, and 3, and we're about to go into phase 4, and if we presume a 4, 5, and 6, and maybe that's why we're not really seeing any threads coming together, is because we are in the first phase of a trilogy of phases.
Potentially.
So
yeah. Yeah.
What are you thinking? Are you thinking Galactus? Are you thinking Secret Wars? Are you thinking Kang, Annihilus?
Yeah, I'm thinking that with the different levels of Kang, that they can do stuff between the Crimson Centurion, between Kang, between Rama Tut, and knowing that they just got the properties of Fantastic Four back. You know, they can lead up to some more stuff with that. So, you know, who knows? But I think that's pretty cool. And where I would kind of lean towards at least at this point, especially with the introduction of the multiverse as we're seeing in the trailers for Far From Home at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It opens up, I think, a lot of possibility for Kang, for Secret Wars, Doctor Doom. So I think there's some good options in there. I would be for as much as I want to see Dr. Doom, I would be really reluctant to have Dr. Doom come in without the Fantastic Four being well established.
Exactly. That's, you can't just have Dr. Doom fighting, you know, whoever.
Yeah. And I'm a huge, interestingly enough, I'm a huge Dr. Doom fan. I am not really as much of a Fantastic Four fan.
I really don't like the Fantastic Four.
So, but like Dr. Doom is hugely, hugely powerful with this combination of technology and mystical stuff that can, you know, totally stand up to, you know, it's basically a combination of Iron Man and Doctor Strange. And it's just a lot of potential in that character. But without the Fantastic Four, I wouldn't want to see it. I guess I'm just kind of holding on to comic tradition. Though.
Like,
sometimes
yeah,
they do make him into a goofball. And
you can't call Doom a goofball.
Yeah. See,
the Fantastic Four movies didn't do him much justice. And some of the comics didn't do him much justice either. But there's other comics that they've written of Doom, which were just absolutely incredible.
There's definitely potential. Yes.
Yeah.
I'm confident that they would use him well, but I've seen him used badly so many times.
Yeah. Totally.
Previously, they chose poorly.
Yes.
Yes.
So speaking of this planning process, Feige also mentioned that they actually started discussing how to adapt the Infinity Gauntlet comic soon after release of the first Avengers film. So that's how far back, and that's just specifically the Infinity Gauntlet comic. They clearly knew that they were going to that.
Yeah. That surprises me. Of all the things they could have picked as a direction, like looking back in hindsight, I'm thrilled that it worked out well. But if you've read the Infinity Gauntlet comic book, that is one of the most ambitious stories to, especially, I mean, you get through the first three issues, Jay, correct me if I'm wrong, that's basically the heroes. And then with issue four, you start getting into, he's taking on Galactus and the Celestials. And then after that, taking on, you know,
it starts
love
with
and
the
hate
snap.
And eternity. And
yeah. I mean, Jim Starlin, like, the man, his brain just goes in very different directions than a lot of writers. And he has this knack for presenting this galactic stuff. But yeah, you know, if you look at the six issues that the Infinity Gauntlet is, which is pretty much the first series, it's not quite the first series, a little thing with Thanos right before that, where he's trying to get the stones. And then there's a number of Infinity stories after that. But, you know, he does the snap and, you know, we're probably mining, I don't know, like 10% of the story potential from comic in what we've seen in the MCU that's interwoven around all sorts of other stuff. And a lot of characters we never get to see because they hadn't introduced them. I mean, people were like, oh, you can't do Infinity Gauntlet without the Silver Surfer because he's, you know, crucial at the beginning.
Right. And Adam Warlock. Like,
well, yeah, the Surfer, yeah. Adam Warlock, Wolverine. I mean, these were major players in the Infinity Gauntlet series in the comics, and Marvel didn't even have a license to use them. So for it to even be considered
is kind of crazy
when people are like looking at these and saying, well, we don't have a Surfer, we don't have this character, we don't have that character. You know, most of these characters we don't even have license to use, so why would we do this story? And they completely reimagined it, which I love. And that's been one of the great things about the MCU, that even for those of us who have knowledge of the comic stories and the comic characters, it's very rarely that we ever come across someone who watches one of the movies and says, well, it's not what they did in the comic, so I don't like it.
Yeah.
Everyone has said pretty universally they've done a freaking awesome job. Even though they've changed a bunch of things, they've done an incredible job with it.
Yeah. I mean, the Surfer's intro was completely filled in by the Hulk, but they did that scene verbatim with the Hulk falling through Dr. Strange's stairwell saying, he's coming, he's coming.
Yep.
And you totally buy it because they've created this rich world of all these characters, and like you said, they had to reimagine it, and it's great. It's some of the best adaptations of comic book material because it's taking the ideas from the comic. It's not just taking the what happened in a rote sense, like, oh, right, well, Wolverine did this, so we got to have Wolverine do the same thing in the movie.
Yeah, it's we're not watching Sin City or 300 or something like that,
or Watchmen,
like panel by panel.
I mean, Watchmen is the best example of that. Yeah.
So, yeah. No, yeah. And it's really impressive that they managed to pull it off so successfully. I guess I'm just really shocked that if you rewind, if you go back, you know, 10 years or however long, of all of the storylines to decide to go with, Infinity Gauntlet would have been the last one I would have picked just because of how ridiculously and ultimately epic it is. Literally, like, Thanos takes over. There's a character in the Marvel universe that is the embodiment of eternity, which is basically existence in general, and Thanos takes him on.
Yeah,
that the concept of that is just untouchable in cinema. Mm-hmm. So going with the Infinity Gauntlet storyline at all really surprised me.
Yeah,
I would have picked any other storyline.
And that's one of the only times that the Watchers ever actually interfered. was in the comics in the Infinity Gauntlet story. You know, it's really, really interesting stuff that, like, in terms of comic lore. And they did a real, they also did a very interesting adaptation of Nebula and her role, because her role in Infinity Gauntlet was pretty significant. And it was very significant in the MCU telling of this, but they changed it completely.
Mm-hmm.
So, they also changed the nature of the gauntlet itself. They powered it down a lot in the movie.
Well, I think they had to simply, we're seeing this a lot. I mean, there was even an article I saw recently that, like, oh, Mjolnir is significantly less powerful in the MCU than it is in comics. Well,
yeah, they have to.
Yeah, you're dealing with a lot of there's too many humans in the MCU that we're dealing with, and you can't have stuff that's so incredibly overpowered. And I think that that's going to be a challenge that they have with Captain Marvel. They got to keep her spacebound, because that's really going to be her only challenge, unless they really draw the humanity. They draw on her humanity, which was what they did in the Captain Marvel movie. But going forward, that I don't think they really can. They need to keep her cosmic. Yeah. So let's see.
Keep her as far away from Earth as possible. For as long as possible.
The last couple things on here, real quick. So the Disney Plus shows, Kevin did confirm, are going to be totally and completely integrated into the MCU. So it's not going to be like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Saying that his entire MCU career was actually building up to the On Your Left moment that came from Falcon in Endgame. Which was just an absolutely monumental half second of the whole MCU. It was awesome.
That was, yeah, I need to see it again on the big screen before it goes away, because it's so freaking unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Some short kind of otherwise related news items here. First of all, Jon Favreau has a show coming out on Netflix on June 7th called The Chef Show, which is interesting because either of you guys see his movie that he did called Chef?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Yeah, that was a fun movie.
It was a really cool movie. I liked it. So he's doing this series.
Made me hungry.
He's doing this series on Netflix, and the teaser that I saw for it has a bunch of MCU actors and other MCU related folks in it. So if you're a fan, absolutely, you know, jump in and see that. I'm looking forward to that coming out on June 7th. Ming-Na Wen, who plays Agent May, Jon Favreau, who has directed Iron Man, and Robert Downey Jr., of course, as Iron Man, received the 2019 Disney Legends Awards for marking their contributions to Disney over the decades. And Ming-Na has done other things other than her role of Agent May. She voiced Mulan. She's done some other voice work within Disney. Same thing with Favreau, who's done some other directing and voice work, including stuff on Star Wars The Clone Wars. And Robert Downey Jr., who has done some voice work as well for some Disney films, but obviously his most notable thing is as Iron Man. So,
and he's got the Disney. I mean, he's already shot Dr. Doolittle, but Disney's been sitting on that for a while because they're going to release that. What, I think it's next year or either later. Maybe it's Christmas this year then. So,
okay. Yep. Yep. And let's see, Red Cinema in Greensboro, North Carolina, put up a really cool mural to honor Stan Lee, which I thought was neat, and got this off of comicbook.com. They have a nice picture of it. It's kind of a red and black background of you know, Spider-Man and a lot of other different heroes. And then it has an image of Stan in front, and if my image will load fast enough, I remember there was something that it said.
Yeah, it says dream.
There
but
it
in
is,
the kind of the Marvel
on there.
Font.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah.
That's
so,
pretty cool.
Yeah, that's just kind of a neat thing for the entrance to the theater to have up there, and I hope it's a permanent thing, because I just think that's fantastic. I mean, that's a real nice homage to someone who has been involved in so much.
And just a great thing to have, I mean, for a theater, you know, to say dream, you know, that's, you know, that's
what movies are all about.
I think to say about, for the theater and stuff. So,
yeah.
Very cool.
Regarding Stan Lee, Kevin Smith does a lot of podcasting, and I don't remember which of his podcasts it was, whether it was Smodcast or Hollywood Babble On. I think it was Hollywood Babble On. He had a tribute episode to Stan Lee, and it was really, really good. He told some stories over the years of him and Stan Lee because they became good friends, and it was, I think it's worth going out of your way to listen to at some point. It was both very touching and also very interesting as well. It gives you some interesting insights into who Stan Lee was later in life.
Yeah.
So yeah. I'd recommend it.
Cool.
So I originally had two discussion items for us to hit here, and just, I think simply for the sake of time of where we are, we're just going to hit one of them. And I'm actually going to recycle both of these again into the next episode because I want to get impressions and thoughts from John and Liz on these as well, because they may have some different perspectives on it. But one of the big things that's kind of hanging out there in the MCU is this 5-year time jump, which is very relevant for the people who are snapped and then returned 5 years later. And they're returned essentially at the age that they were at. There's some real life implications, like their mortgages may have been canceled and, you know, other odd things that may have occurred. And being someone who does disaster management professionally, like, I can't imagine the whole litany of things that would have to get addressed through this, and the endless committee meetings and all that kind of stuff that would happen with these things. But trying to keep things as much in universe as possible, there are certain implications of things that that I wanted to bring up, and I just kind of listed a handful of these, and you guys might come up with some thoughts on your own for this 5-year jump. So one of the people that we lost was T'Challa. While T'Challa was gone, who ruled Wakanda? Do you think we're going to get any sense of that in, like, Black Panther 2? Or are they just going to kind of skip over it as an unnecessary detail? What do you guys think is going to happen with that?
Because Shuri was gone too, wasn't she?
Yes.
I have a very unpopular opinion about the 5-year time jump. And it's that I just don't care.
Okay.
Like, I don't care to have it filled in. I think it starts to become nitpicking about story details that get to be distracting from the point of what we watched and the theme of what we watched. And I think if it's something that builds on a story point in Black Panther 2, for example, then okay. Like, if they're going to use it in the story, then it becomes relevant. And then I would be interested in finding out, okay, what happened. But even then, it becomes a moment of exposition. Now, I think you could do one-shots, you could do novels, you could do comic books or something like that, exploring what happened during that time period if you had a compelling story for it. And as we saw at the beginning of Endgame, there are some stories to tell. There, you know, people are dealing with loss and things like that. And, you know, what is the world like when you lose half the population? But on the flip side of it, like, now that it's been undone, how relevant is it really anymore as far as the movies go? Because in the movies, you have such a limited amount of storytelling you can do. I don't think we're going to get a lot of these answers for anything. And there are a lot of things that are going to be just kind of written off for the sake of convenience, like Peter Parker and his classmates. The official answer, if I recall, was, yeah, well, they all of the classmates that Peter Parker knew disappeared, and now they're all back, and so everybody's the same age, so sure. That they can then proceed with the next movie.
Sure.
Yeah, so there's some convenience issues there as well. But Are we even going to find out who ruled Wakanda while T'Challa was gone? Well, if we do, I think it'll be a sentence or two, and that'll be it.
Right.
See, when they told us that we were getting this time jump and that Far From Home was coming afterwards, I was thinking that, well, Far From Home is going to be a prequel. And, you know, Peter was on a bus at the beginning of Infinity War, so maybe that's him and his class coming back from their trip to Europe. Mm-hmm. Like, they were doing it right before this all happened.
Sure.
Right, obviously, sure. That's not the case. My take on any sort of time jump that is made concrete in films, whether it's like 1 year later, 20 years later, 5 years later, whatever it is, or in any media, like this goes to stuff that I've been talking about for Arrow this season, because they were doing 20-year flash forwards to like the kids of the current cast or the current heroes and stuff. It's relevant for the story you're telling, kind of the way that Eric was describing it. But if you start to kind of expand beyond that, weird questions start to come up and things right. may or may not start to fall apart. It gets complicated fast. It does. And it's a useful storytelling device, but I don't know for something this epic, the writers and the directors, mentioned they needed something that made it seem like there was a passage of time that people had to come to terms with grief and change who they were, like to show that, the Hulk became smart and Hawkeye went off to become Ronin and, you know, Captain America was dealing with his grief and Tony became who he was. And they needed it to be a little bit long because they wanted Tony to have a daughter. Mm-hmm. But it was these, you know, kind of just nebulous reasons that they threw this stuff together. And, you know, then all of a sudden you're like, okay, cool. Well, 5 years. So do any movies we do now have to pick up 5 years later? And like, you know, all of a sudden we're in the future because we're talking, this is all 2023 if we're actually looking, you know, and
right.
because they've named dates, you know, these things start to break down. You know, you had dates that were put in Spider-Man Homecoming that fans have been arguing about since that came out because it said 8 years later, but those were obviously wrong. There's questions on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. this season because they're saying it's all pre-snap because they didn't want to get into any of this stuff. But then 2 minutes into the first episode of season 6, they said 1 year later.
Yeah.
And you're like, well, what does that mean?
Right.
Because obviously there's no, it's got to be post-snap then, but they aren't talking about it. So
right.
Who knows, you know, and we're talking about there's multiverses and all sorts of time travel and things that are happening in the different shows and the movies. But I'm not a huge fan of that sort of trope, I guess, because it just leads to all sorts of other questions. If you want to have a character, you know, may have some change and all of a sudden, you do 30 minutes of a movie and then it's 20 years later. And now, you know, they went from being a kid and now they're an adult and you finish off the movie. That's one thing. But if everything you've been doing with all your characters for a multiple movie arc or most of a movie, and then in the last little bit, like let's say you're watching a 2-hour movie and then the last 10 minutes you jump forward 10 years so that you can tell an epilogue.
Yeah.
You could have probably done that in a different way that was a little more creative, I think.
Sure. Yeah, there's a lot of challenges with this.
When you're watching a magic trick, it's really awesome. Until the more you sit down and try to figure out how the magic trick works, if you figure it out, then the magic is no longer magic.
Mm.
And
as soon as you start dissecting
not
it.
The yeah. best analogy to use here, but if you really start to pick apart, okay, well, who took care of Dr. Strange's apartment in New York when he was gone? And, you know, who was watering so-and-so's flowers? And like,
also
it kind of starts to unravel and you, you get distracted from what matters to the storytelling. It's not about reality. If this were the real world, then yes, those things would be really relevant. Like, you know, do I lose my house because I missed 5 years worth of mortgages? Or does the government step in and you know, create some kind of a clause where there's forgiveness for, you know, debt repayment and things like that? But it's a story.
Yeah.
And the story is about the story. The story is not about the surrounding things to the story.
I'm seeing a Marvel one shot with damage control and an insurance adjuster directed by Takeo Waititi that takes place during these 5 years here right now. As you're describing this, like, it's writing itself.
I would totally watch that.
Yeah, that would be awesome.
I would totally watch that.
I want to be signed on as an advisor.
Yeah. there you go.
Yeah,
so, like, it's an interesting thought experiment.
Yeah, but
as far as how it relates to the, like, it's almost a more of an interesting thought experiment as to how it would relate to us if we were in that world. But as to how it would relate to, like, specific things that we've seen or not seen, it almost becomes more distracting than.
Yeah. So, like, what I'm hearing from you guys is essentially kind of like, I guess, akin to the concept of having to suspend our disbelief. It's kind of like, just get in the car, go along for the ride, and live with it. Don't try to dig into it, because if you do, you're going to screw it up for yourself.
I mean, well, I think people thinking about the time travel elements of this and the branching, and then he has to go back, and what, you know, does Steve live out the rest of his life in another branch or in our reality? It doesn't matter. This film, to me, does the emotional closure, which overwhelms the logical sense. And that's, in my opinion, when I'm going to movies, that is the way it should be. If I am not entertained enough, or they drop the ball enough and ask too many questions, the logical part of my brain takes over and I go, well, wait, why are they doing this? You know, it's like when you watch a horror film. If it's a good horror film and it just wraps you up in the excitement and the horror, you forget about certain logical things that you might think about those later, but in the moment they're missing. And Endgame did that to me from an emotional standpoint of caring about these characters.
Yeah.
And by the way, speaking of Captain America, and this was another thing I caught from a Kevin Smith podcast, go back and rewatch the scene with Captain America talking to Peggy Carter on her deathbed.
Mm, yes.
My son put that on the weekend after.
That conversation
takes
on a whole different thing regarding, you know, did she or did she not spend her life with Steve? And there's Steve, oh, you look so young now. And there's the whole thing there. But I think that the producers have confirmed that it's supposed to be he lived out his life in a different timeline or something. But yeah, it throws all those questions in there, and you have to just kind of get around it.
Paradoxes.
What impact is this going to have on the MCU in future material? I think that it'll be mentioned here and there. But if you are looking for answers on anything, I think you are going to be disappointed. I don't think that that's the type of thing that they have any interest in answering, unless it's something that directly affects that particular project and that particular story in a specific way.
Like, I don't think Far From Home will address it at all, because it seems like the emotional core of that film is going to be wrapped up in Peter losing his mentor and his friend. And having to learn how to be the best person he can be now on his own, you know, to move into that hero role that that he was inspired to be part of.
And I think the multiverse angle is going to distract people enough that people won't even think about the 5-year gap.
Look over here.
Right. And it goes back to the magic argument again about the misdirection. You know, focus on what you're supposed to focus on.
Mysterio.
And not about the rest of the stuff.
Yes. Got it. I see how this is all coming together now. Very good job, Eric.
Yeah, thank you. I have my moments. Not often, but.
And it's funny. So you mentioned the multiverse thing, but both of you guys did. And that was really the other discussion point, which I think would have been like a rabbit hole that we would have gone way down into. So
most
probably
multiverses
more interesting.
Are.
Yeah, probably more interesting, but we would have spent a lot of time on that because there just are so many different possibilities. And of course, both of you guys knowing a lot of the comic lore, and because the comics explored a lot of multiverse things. I mean, I had some quick notes on here that I threw together. You guys probably would have thrown in a lot more into this too. So, yeah, there's some interesting stuff there. And there'll be a discussion for another time.
When you do, I want you to discuss this on an upcoming show. Is this going to be how they are going to introduce mutants?
Yeah, it could be. I've also seen some thoughts on what was the article I read today?
Was it the Negative Zone or something?
Something associated with Scarlet Witch.
She's going to House of
M. They would do a reverse of House of M.
Yeah,
where she would like have her safe space, and then something would happen, and she would flip out. And the amount of power that she would release would cause mutations. So it would be a complete reversal of the House of M story.
But they haven't shown her to be that powerful in the MCU, though. That's another example of them watering down someone's powers a lot. So,
Dr. Strange, too, to have her be part of that in some fashion.
I would love to see that. And I want to see it from the perspective of not him teaching her stuff, because that's a very easy trope for them to fall into. I just want a team up movie, just a classic. They are equals teaming up, and both of them just being impressed all the hell with each other. And well, no, they're not equals, because she's crazy more powerful than he is. But I think it's very easy for a writer to say, I mean, both from a gender perspective and just from kind of a classic storytelling perspective, that, you know, he would be the teacher teaching her how to better harness her powers or something, which is completely unnecessary because, yeah, she's way more powerful than he is.
In the comics, yes. In the movies, it's the other way around.
In the MCU, I think it's different powers. They just have different powers and different abilities. I mean, she could crack a planet if she wanted to, I think, if she knew how to tap into that.
I don't think the MCU has demonstrated that that's the case.
Rabbit hole.
The comics have.
Rabbit hole.
Okay.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right, Eric. But I know that you have a hard out that happened 2 minutes ago. So
that's okay.
Yeah, we got to get you to work, and Jay has nap time coming up. So, Eric, do you want to start off our closing? Are you in the show?
Sure. We would love if people would send us feedback. We want to hear what you thought about this episode, about any of the topics we discussed, about your opinions on the various different theories. Send them to guardians@randomchatter.com. Another place you can discuss it is if you go to Discord, as Tim mentioned at the top of the show. We have a channel dedicated to each one of the shows on the network, including this one, Guardians of the MCU, and we would love to hear your discussion about this episode there in Discord. Now, to get that, just go to randomchatter.com/Discord. It is free. Access to this channel is free, and we would love to see you there.
And you can also hit up the normal hosts on Twitter, at Random Chatter. Or you can hit up Tim here at Qui-Gon Tim, Q-U-I-G-O-N, and Tim with two M's. And Liz is at TWT About Lizzie with two Z's in it. And they also have their Instagram channels, Random Chatter. And then there's @_JonStewart, JonStewart. And Liz is at The Wonderful Thing About Lizzie. Could that be any longer? Oh, my goodness.
And how about you guys? Where can folks find you guys?
People can find me at JovialJ on Twitter. That's where I spend most of my time. And you can find out about all the other cool things I'm doing with the RetroZap Network, with my podcasts and writing assignments and stuff that I do over there.
For me, you can find me primarily on our Discord server, actually. I don't really do the social media stuff that much anymore. You can find me at Eric Blythe on Twitter. That's E-R-I-K-B-L-Y-T-H-E. You know, you mentioned a little rabbit hole. You're here. You mentioned what a long Twitter name Lizzie had there for, oh, it was Instagram, I guess.
Yeah, Instagram.
Have you guys
yeah.
seen Thumb Wars? I know Jay's seen Thumb Wars.
Yeah,
it's been a while, okay. but yeah.
So I used to have an email address just to kind of piss people off. It was ubidoobscoobydoobybanoobie@hotmail.com.
And no one used it.
That was the one I gave to people that I didn't like to use, and a few people did, but...
There you yeah. go. Jay, is there anything you want to plug? You mentioned RetroZap. We've talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files.
Right now, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Case Files is coming out weekly on Mondays as the episodes for S.H.I.E.L.D. come out on Fridays. My other two shows, Green Justice and Arrow Podcast and Scarlet Velocity of Flash Podcast, are both in hiatus because they just finished up their season finales, but we've got some summer specials we're doing there. I continue to look up locations for the MCU at MCU Location Scout, which is my tweets are at MCU Locations, and I do write-ups for those at RetroZap, and then I've also got a Saturday article series I'm doing called Sci-Fi Saturdays, where I started in the 1950s and I'm watching a different sci-fi movie, usually like the big ones from the era, but also some other ones to kind of flesh everything out. And I'm just kind of working chronologically up through the different films here. I'm just getting ready to move into the 60s pretty soon, so I'm very excited about that, because wow. some of these 50 films are they get a little tedious, so
yeah,
because they're just old, you know. So
yeah,
it's so cool though, and your write-ups of them are great. Are just out of curiosity, Jay, do you own these movies? Are you seeking them out? Are you just finding them on streaming services?
Yes, it's a vast. I've got a
Mystery Science Theater 3000 reruns.
Yeah, I mean it's like 50% my library. There's stuff I can find on you know, Netflix and Amazon Prime, and renting stuff if I can't, or borrowing it, or you know, whatever yeah. I need to do. So YouTube nice. Has some great some of these older films are in full on YouTube, which is yeah. pretty incredible too.
Oh, so. Cool. Fantastic. Well, guys, thank you once again for joining me tonight and absolutely on short notice standing in for John and Liz. Really, really great discussion. I love getting different perspectives on here. Jay, it was great having you back again. Eric, it was yeah, great to have you on here for the first time, and hopefully we didn't
thank
scare you off. You'll come back again sometime in the near future.
I would be happy to come back and correct all of your misconceptions about all the things about which you are wrong. I'd love that.
Yeah, good. Thanks. Yeah. The invitation's in the mail.
The invitation just got rescinded.
With that, folks, thank you all for joining us for this discussion, and we'll see you in about a week.